Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MG, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a shout-out to my awesome patron, Mr. Big Bence, for supporting me on my Patreon account. If you would like to help support the channel, help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information and information on rewards. Also, since last week I released the 100th episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast, yay! Thank you, me. I currently have a giveaway going on right now where if you like my post on Twitter, the Mark post on Twitter, if you like it, if you follow me on Twitter, and if you retweet the tweet, you can be entered to win your choice of one of two of the new Innistrad Midnight Hunt Commander decks. So definitely be on the lookout for that, and again, you can find that post over at twitter.com/mtginquarantine. Now, for the content of today's episode, it's going to be another in the Guild Talk series, where I bring awesome members of the community on to talk about the two color pairings in Magic's history. And I've done a couple of these already, but now I'm getting to the guild that I have technically adopted as my new favorite, and that is the Boros Legion. So, in order to talk about this awesome red-white pairing, lace up your bootstraps, get your swords handy, and get ready to welcome Doug back from EDH Rec. Welcome back to the show.
Hey guys, I'm Dougie Nerd, just here to talk some Boros Legion, or Lorehold if you prefer to actually have some card advantage in your life, but we're getting there.
All right, so again, you work over on EDH Rec. How about you tell the listeners a little bit more about what you do over there?
I run the two specific top 10 series. It comes out every Friday, where we're not just doing regular top 10s. We're trying to get really, really down into the nitty gritty and find some weird stuff for you and figure out what the what is the best when you really get into a weird specific category. So if you looked over at EDH Rec right now and went back a little bit, you'd see my article with Garuda and expensive even creatures. And then we'll have another one coming out on Friday that should be about green cantrips, because we're actually getting to the point where we have some of those.
Whoa, cool. Yeah, that's really interesting. I can't wait to read that article when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the green cantrips one, and then the odd and even series has been a lot of fun as well with Garuda and Obosh. But as far as Boros, that's my one true love here. when I started playing way back in Fallen Empires, it was my first thing I did was picked up a Repentant Blacksmith to have protection from red and a Mountain Yeti to have protection from white. And then I figured out that you could do Inferno and your Repentant Blacksmith wouldn't die and you could hit him for six and then swing for one.
Whoa, that is some real value right there.
You say that, but honestly, my main Boros deck that I play at this point is basically the exact same thing. I'm going to wipe the board with some and each player board wipe type stuff, and all my creatures are going to survive, and then I'm going to swing in for 30 damage is the plan. So,
All right. So again, you've already kind of explained how you first got into playing this Boros pairing. So I guess my first question for you, Doug, is what about Boros is it that really keeps you interested in the color pairing? Obviously, the Magic community loves to take a crap on Boros because it's too underpowered or it only does one thing. And as you and I know, Boros is extremely variable. There's a lot of cool stuff you can do in this color pairing, even just like from stuff 2-3 years ago you could. And now, especially with Lorehold coming out, with some of the new commanders that are coming out, Boros is more varied and diverse than ever. So what exactly about this pairing really keeps you interested in playing red and white specifically?
I mean, if I'm honest, it really is a bit of the hipster in me. It is very varied these days, but what I really like about it, I think, if I really am honest with myself, is getting down into not only getting to play something that's a little bit different than what everybody else is doing, but even getting into the counterculture aspect of it a little bit and kind of snubbing your nose a little bit and saying, well, you know, this actually can be pretty good. That feels really nice to kind of put a strategy together that is cohesive enough that you can really wipe tables with it, even though you're the Boros deck and kind of come out of nowhere. So I think the challenge of it is something that I enjoy. That challenge is obviously getting a lot easier these days. There's You can do card advantage in Boros now. You can do, in addition to card advantage, you can do ramp in Boros now as well. So there's getting to be a lot more options, and it's a little, you're not really scraping the bottom of the barrel like you used to be to make something work. But the challenge is still there. It's still probably, quote unquote, the worst color combination in EDH. Maybe a better way to think about that would be the hardest to brew rather than the worst, however.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that. Is I ended up getting started in Boros after I really had been playing Commander for a while, or playing EDH for a while. And I ended up landing on this color combination because it combined the thing I really wanted to do, which is beat face with creatures by turning them sideways, with really good ways to be able to pump said creatures. So whether it's White's ability to give a lot of Anthem effects, or Red's ability to give you, I mean, obviously with Red, the first thing I think of is Team or Battle Rage. So
Sure.
the opportunity to be able to then give my creatures all sorts of ridiculous abilities, or just be able to blow stuff up, it definitely worked with my interest, and that's why I really started to gravitate towards Boros. But again, just as you said, it's also the I guess unique brewer in me who wants to build something like a challenge. Again, I have mentioned this on previous episodes before, but if you've ever played against me, or if you've ever heard me talk about how I build decks, I always like to take a challenge. If someone tells me a card is unplayable, I will usually say challenge accepted, and I'll try to do something with that just to prove a point. I have mentioned this with my Kotha-fed deck multiple times on the show, but the same also goes for Boros. Is that the more I hear about Boros is bad, you can't play it, only has one thing you're trying to do, well, that just makes me want to try to build this more and then try to beat your face in with some awesome creatures and do some cool stuff. Again, before the show, we were talking about some of the decks that we really enjoyed. So you have your board wipe tribal-ish deck, I suppose, and that's Tajik, Blade of the Legion, right?
Legion's Edge, actually.
Legion's
So
Edge,
not
you're right.
yeah, not the indestructible one. The one
Not
that he prevents all non-combat damage to other creatures you control. So, like I was saying earlier, what the deck really wants to do is get a whole bunch of little aggro creatures out there, wipe the board with a damage-based board wipe. And I went a step further into that, and I tried to play only the damage-based board wipes that say "and each player" on them to really make sure I'm putting some pressure on Life Totals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you wipe the board, put some pressure on life totals, all your creatures survive except for maybe Tajik, and then you just get to swing with all your aggro creatures to kind of finish people off. And sometimes you have to go through that process a couple times, but there's a lot of stuff that can help with that, especially, the classic repercussion.
Or even just like the standard earthquake effect too, does that
Yeah,
yeah, that.
Earthquake and its lesser loved cousin, Rolling Earthquake.
Oh, yeah. Tajik actually was the first playmat I ever got my hands on. It looks so cool, just the fact he's got the sword there, the helmet, and all that, and then it's just a really good card. So yeah, I definitely dig on that one. And it's kind of similar to my first Boros deck. I have an Archangel Avacyn deck, which I run very similarly. Is I like to make a whole bunch of tokens in that deck, keep Avacyn in the command zone most of the time, and then if you try to wipe my board, nope, flash her in. Make sure my board stays healthy, your stuff goes.
You
And
want to
yeah, again, this is a commander where I really started to learn the value having flash on a commander and the ability to just be able to threaten that I can flash my commander in. I don't even have to, but it's an interesting deterrent for my opponents wanting to use any kind of targeted removal because they know as long as I have 5 mana and 2 white pips up, I can technically flash my commander in and potentially foil their plans. It's that kind of thing that definitely doesn't always scream Boros when you look at it, but when you start digging in a little bit, it just completely fits this color combination to a T. I just can't describe it. It's just so awesome. I like that deck.
Yeah, Archangel Avacyn's probably one of my favorite commanders in Boros. Although, if you want to talk about some weird brews in Boros, I think my favorite version of that deck I've ever seen is actually Archangel Avacyn with Blink as the theme. So you could
Yeah,
just
I
at
think I've seen that,
will
yeah.
basically give your creatures, indestructible whenever you wanted, and you could flip her repeatedly to keep on taking out all the little creatures as well. It was pretty brutal, actually.
Yeah, I actually do run some blink in that deck, or at least some type flicker type effects. Not as many as I used to because I realized that I was not leaving enough room in for some of the other awesome cards I wanted to have in there. And maybe the deck has been a little bit less performing, I suppose, after I started doing that. So maybe I'll have to go back and add some more blink effects back into the deck and just see what happens. It's one of those things where I just keep tinkering with that deck. I always want to add more cards, and then I realize, well, it's not doing as well as it used to. Maybe I need to make some changes. But as far as the deck shell, it's great. I really love having the ability to be able to flip her when I need to, but also just be able to keep my whole team safe. It's really nice to basically be able to run a mono-white deck out of a Boros shell.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. Just one commander there. You can kind of go the aggro route. You can go the even the control right route with Archangel Avacyn. And then there's also a Blink deck out there that I've seen as well, where they went all in on Blink. And the nice thing about it is, you know, unlike the Brago decks that you're used to dirtling, in Boros, if you're in the Blink strategy, you're killing people. Like, you have a Purphoros out, and you're just like, okay, that's 10 damage to the board this turn, and I'm going to swing out with all my hasty creatures, and, you know, just, like, it gets out of hand really, really fast.
Oh, yeah. But if I tried to build that, it would totally be banned out of my local play group. So I have some incentive to not try to do that. Purphoros is kind of on the do not invite list, if you want to say it that way, to my local commander table.
Well, then you do Pandemonium instead and invite everyone to the carnage.
Here's Pandemonium followed by its very close cousin Insurrection. Now I'll have all of your creatures. Oh man, yeah, that Avacyn deck is really fun. It's my first Boros deck, and I haven't played it in a while, but it's fun. Yeah, and the card advantage alone, just of having a commander with flash, is fun. And I really do enjoy that Boros is able to do that sort of thing. Plus, I also do have the playmat of the Purifier side of that as well. So I really do enjoy playing on that once in a while, especially when I can have the Avacyn deck played on the Avacyn playmat. So
yeah, it's always great to have the theme playmat. I love that.
Yep, especially for that one. Anyway, so now that we've talked about a couple of the decks that we've personally built, I guess I want to ask you about Lorehold and how that all fits in. Obviously, Lorehold dropped in Strixhaven. We got a whole bunch of interesting new commanders. We got Oscar. We got Vel'Maka's Lorehold. We got Quintorius. We got just some interesting commanders that don't necessarily do the same things that Boros seems to usually do, which is usually combat. And I say usually, but typically we see a lot of combat or similar damage type effects, but a lot of these start looking at instants or sorceries or trying to exile cards from your graveyard, etc., create tokens, just give anthems for certain types of effects. As far as Quintorius is concerned, Where do you sit on what we saw with Strixhaven for Lorehold? And do you think that this is a really good direction for Boros to go in and see more of these types of effects in the future?
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Boros aggro. It's part of the reason that I love the color combination so much. When Ixalan came out and I saw Sky Terror in there, I was like, Flying Menace, okay, for 2 mana in the air, I was the first one to be forcing those colors in draft to make it happen. So I don't want to talk badly about aggro Boros at all. I think it's very, very fun. I think that the equipment decks that we've been used to seeing in the strategy are very, very fun. That said, Lorehold is kind of a revelation. They really, I think, more so than a lot of the other color combinations we saw in Strixhaven, where they were trying to lean into, okay, this is what the red, this is what this side of the enemy color does, and this is what this side of the enemy color does, and we want to focus on the opposites that are there. With Lorehold specifically, you really felt that a lot more than a lot of the other schools. I felt like getting into basically the archaeology and history of it, which is about as the opposite of what we're used to with the Boros Legion as you can get. But what it really resulted in, and continues to result in as we continue to make red and white better all the time, is getting rid of a lot of the weaknesses that we had in the color combination in EDH in a fluid manner that, you know, kind of made sense within the theme of the set. So Lorehold, it gave us a whole bunch of, you know, the commanders that we've kind of been waiting for in the color combination, to do whatever we wanted to do in the colors. So you're not just stuck with auras and equipment and aggro, which again can all be a lot of fun, but not in the same way As you see with Ozgear going real deep in on value artifacts and getting all of the things that play around with the graveyard straight out of the Lorehold set. What is it? Quintorius the Elephant is, I mean, it honestly would be a black card in pretty much any other set, but they said, no, let's give this to him. Whenever cards leave the graveyard, you get to make spirit tokens, and your spirits get +1/+0, so you can keep on swinging with them as well. And even better than that, we're starting to lean in those directions even outside of Strixhaven. It seems like they're continuing in that direction. One of the ones that I feel like didn't get enough love out of Modern Horizons 2 was General Ferris Rockerick. He's got Hexproof for monocolored, so he's basically got protection from artifacts, which is interesting, and lands, which is relevant more often than you think it would be. And then whenever you cast a multicolored spell, you create a 4/4 red and white Golem artifact creature token. So that's leaning into multicolor matters in Boros, which is a lot of fun, and also getting you into a large token strategy at the same time.
Yeah, and but that still kind of comes back to doing what Boros does best, and that's create a lot of tokens and, be able to have those pieces to then be able to either swing with or to have your Purphoros trigger, let's say. So yeah, it definitely feels like a different way to get about to doing the same thing you want to do. And again, since we just love Boros, it's always interesting to have extra options available to us that still kind of feel like they're within this color pairing.
And you're right, General Ferris Rockerick is kind of still Boros, but it feels a lot different given the fact that it's bigger tokens and it's really leaning into that multicolored matters theme, which is going to drive you into a whole bunch of split cards, or not split cards. Well, some of them are multicolored, but a lot of the various just Boros themed charms and what have you that we've seen over the years, along with some of just the great aggro creatures as well.
Yeah.
Even beyond that, I mean, we're getting more and more different options in the color combination all the time. I put together a slight list here. Even before Strixhaven, we were looking at the new Gerard. He didn't get a whole lot of love, but he was very easy to combo out with, which was interesting. And him being able to get stuff in and out of the graveyard quickly kind of lets you put together an Aristocrats deck in Boros, which is something we'd never really seen before, and include artifacts with it as well, so you could also go the eggs route if you wanted. Winota was another one that just really took the top off of where you could go as far as the power level. Same with Zirda the Dawnwaker, the companion that everybody kind of knows for instantly comboing with any number of Basalt Monoliths and that kind of thing to get you infinite mana. But it's honestly just a great commander for activated abilities in general, even if you don't go the combo route, or a great companion for it as well. Way back in the day, we got Tiana, one of my favorite things I've seen with her. Generally, it's just okay, it's Tiana Aras. You can also do Pacifism Tribal with her as well, which was one that was a lot of fun and you've been able to do for a long time now. We're leaning heavier into artifacts with Ozgear, although Jor-Kadeen was also in that category as well back in the day.
And it
And
actually is
then,
in the Lorehold precon as well.
yes, yeah, Jor-Kadeen, I love seeing that in the Lorehold precon because it really fit with the theme they were going with when they leaned in heavy on the
Oh yeah,
artifacts.
it's a great anthem effect, and for those who don't know what Jor-Kadeen does, Jor-Kadeen is a 5/4 for 3 red and a white, has first strike and also metalcraft, so creatures you control get +3/+0 as long as you control 3 or more artifacts, which if you're playing Boros artifacts, you're probably gonna get.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
But yeah,
and the
there's a whole bunch of different ways to go with Boros. You can even go super friends these days with Mila. It really, we're getting to the point where you can do just about anything you want in the color combination, and it's not just aggro and damage board wipes with Firesong and Sunspeaker and Repercussion and those kind of things, which again all have their place and they're all really fun. But you really can just kind of build whatever deck you want in the color combination now, and I think that's healthy for it.
Yeah, and another one that we should definitely mention is Belborca out of Commander Legends. The one that allows you to change its power regarding the cards you put into exile that turn. So, again, another way of looking at Boros in a completely different manner, but also still kind of fits within that same sphere.
And more importantly, the other half of that card is a card advantage commander in Boros. It says exile top character library, and you can play that card this turn at the beginning of each upkeep. And that by itself is worth playing it. In fact, I see Belborca in the 99 of Boros decks fairly often to literally just be that exile card a turn, that Phyrexian Arena, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Especially since Red's been leaning much more heavily recently into impulse draw like this, that it just seems to
Yeah.
fit that you can also take White along for the ride.
Right, exactly.
All right, so again, we've been talking about how Boros, where Boros has been, where Boros is now. Let's get our thinking caps on and try to look in the crystal ball of the next, 3 to 5 years. Where do you see Boros slash Lorehold going in the next couple of years? And what do you think are some of the things that we may end up seeing that we may not have already seen in this color pairing? Lorehold obviously broke the box wide open regarding what you can do in this color pairing. Maybe we'll see more of that kind of stuff. Who knows? What would you like to see going forward?
I think we are going to see a lot of the return to what we know of as Boros in the standard sets. There will be some shout-out cards, that will lean more in the Lorehold direction and play around a little bit in that space. We're going to continue to see emphasis on artifact creatures, for instance. Artifacts in general, equipment certainly, auras certainly. All that's going to kind of remain in there. But for the most part in standard sets, you kind of have to play red and white as what they are, which is generally going to be the aggro color combination. It's just little white creatures and red damage. And that's always going to be the heart of the color pairing, and I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I do think they're going to go in a slightly different direction when it comes to the non-standard sets for all the Modern Horizons and Battle Bonds and all those kind of things. I think you're going to see a lot more leaning into the Lorehold direction or even new directions. In the color combination, we certainly haven't even scraped the surface of what red white can cover with these new combinations we've seen. Really, we've just kind of leaned heavier into artifacts. We played a little bit with the graveyard. We've said, okay, impulse draw is out there. What can we do with that? Those kind of things. Most of that evolution, I do think, is because we're kind of in the hey, let's make white better phase of things. I think we're going to see a lot of that evolution on the white side of things, because we've already seen a lot of it on the red side of things already. That said, we're playing with treasure all the time now, so I'm kind of shocked that we haven't seen a treasure specific commander in Boros yet, and I do think that that's going to happen, especially since we're leaning in the artifact direction anyway.
Yeah, and especially since Rakdos has been getting a lot of treasure love as well. Red is half that pair, so it definitely serves to make sense that you could potentially start seeing that crop up in white more too.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of out of the flavor town of the Boros Legion specifically, because honestly, they're not there to make money. They're there to be the Legion and that kind of thing. Maybe you could have it be captured money, that kind of thing. I don't know exactly. That said, it is obviously it makes a lot of artifacts, and that's certainly something you can play with in that space.
Yeah, I feel like Quintorius probably would have liked having treasure, given the whole archaeologist bit. That would have seemed like the perfect place to put treasure in Boros colors.
The elephant Indiana Jones decides that
Yep.
he's going to keep the golden statue.
Yep. Yeah, I really enjoyed it when Lorehold came out because while most people were saying, "Hey, this looks like a really cool way to make Boros not suck," I'm thinking, "Holy crap, someone like me, who, I mean, I majored in history in college. So for me, it's like, hey, I get some interesting representation in a magic set, I suppose. And it's also my potentially favorite color pairing." So, just the fact that you have a whole school, a whole college there based upon learning about the past, based on understanding the past, understand the present and the future, that really resonated with me because that's kind of how I got to now personally in real life, outside the podcast, outside magic. And it was really cool to be able to see the things I learned as a history major in college basically applied to this fantastical setting that we're in. It was just so cool. And then the cards are great.
So let me get this straight. You went to a college and you had experience with a scroll machine gun. That was your college experience?
Yes.
No, I was very, very excited about Lorehold and the entire history angle of it. I really cannot wait to go back there, and I don't remember the last set I said that about, or where we went there, and immediately I was like, no, when are we coming back? Like, this is really awesome. I would love to come back here. From Velimachus, Lorehold, we didn't even talk about the direction that the actual Elder Dragon of the school went, and it almost being, a lean into the spells side of things, which we really haven't seen much in the color combination. And then the dean of the school themselves kind of went in a dual sided with Plarg and Augusta, and it's playing with tapping and untapping creatures and activated abilities, which is another huge deep well we haven't seen explored in the color at all, really. That's something you much more expect out of Naya than Boros specifically. But there's enough of it in this color variant that you can really go deep on that. So there's a lot of design space. I think we're going to fiddle a lot of it. And I think that there's going to be some curveballs we don't even see coming, honestly.
Yeah, actually, though, I did not take a look at those two cards you just mentioned very, very heavily anyway before the show. I really should have. That's interesting though. Augusta kind of has that Sword of the Perunes thing going on there. Tap
Yes.
creatures getting plus one plus O. Other untapped creatures control get plus one or plus O plus one. If you attack, untap each creature you control, then tap any number of creatures you control. So I would have to figure out how to make this work, but it seems interesting. Definitely new design space for sure. And then Lorehold. Definitely, whenever attacks, look at the top seven cards of your library. You may cast an instant or sorcery spell with mana value less than or equal to power from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So kind
Yeah.
of a weird cascade slash impulse effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's leaning into that big spells thing. But no, Velimachus Lorehold, I feel like got some love. I've seen that card around. I would really love it if more people took a look at Plarg and Augusta. The Plarg side of it, is just the two mana side, and he rummages as a tap ability. And then, excuse me here. He rummages as a tap ability, and then he actually reveals cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-legendary, non-land card with mana value three or less, and then you can cast it without paying its mana cost.
Oh,
So
that
kind of
is
the same
nice.
thing as Velimachus, just you have to, it's an activated ability instead, and you pay five mana for it and tap him. So.
Seems like the perfect kind of deck to have Xurta the Dawnwaker in, right?
Absolutely,
As a
yes.
companion, yeah. Because
Yeah.
you have that activated ability right there on your commander.
You're
That's
getting close
interesting.
to me in gushing territory if we start talking about companions. I
Yeah,
have not done Xurta specifically, but I want to build that deck. I really love building around restrictions, and the companions have always spoken to me.
that definitely seems like something I'd also try to build around too, but it wouldn't be a good deck by most standards. It would be a very MJ jank deck if you saw something like that.
You could do it either way. I think the restriction on Xerda is actually not as hard as people make it out to be. There are a lot of good cards that have activated abilities on them.
Oh yeah, definitely. And
Not to
also
mention the 90 infinite mana combos you could put in that deck just as a base level, so.
sure, but also the ability to tap down or kind of tap down an opponent's creature on Xurta there, the one attacked or a creature can't block this turn. That has some applications too, especially for the way I like to play. So
Yeah. I mean, it's an ignored part of the card, but it is surprisingly irrelevant, a shocking amount of the time, and it kind of lets you go aggro. That's something we haven't mentioned. I think that's one of the things I enjoy most about Boros. You can lean into all these other strategies, but the aggro is always there, and it's really nice to have that to lean back on. It's not uncommon at all to be playing your, kind of value game, and then all of a sudden just be like, well, there's nothing to do here except for swing for 20 damage, so let's just do that.
yeah, I feel remiss if I don't mention some of the big, very classic Boros commanders. Currently, Feather the Redeemed, number one on Boros, on the Boros page on EDH Rec. Obviously, a very classic, kind of in the Lorehold thing there, because you are focusing on casting instants and sorceries in that deck. A lot of cantrips, et cetera, and those can be extremely powerful decks.
Yep.
Aurelia the War Leader, obviously giving a shout out to Kristen and PJ from Commander Replay there. This being their favorite commander to run. Firesong and Sunspeaker, the new Akiri, definitely. And there's just so many good commanders out here. going all the way down the list. There's just a lot of fun stuff to play around with. And if you have not had the opportunity to try out a Boros deck, I highly recommend you try us out, because you might think it's boring, but then once you go Boros, you never go back.
Yeah, we kind of did a disservice to Feather there when we were talking about Velamacha's kind of being Spellslinger. Feather is full-on Spellslinger, without a doubt. And not only that, it's kind of mixed with Voltron as well. You're just cantripping and getting spells in and out of the graveyard all the time. It's a blast.
True, but I feel like with Lorehold's case, though, you're not going to be playing only cantrips. Most of the Feather decks I've seen are trying to play the 1-2 mana cantrips. Whereas Lorehold can play
the opposite with Lorehold, for sure.
Yeah, Lorehold can play a ton of just the larger spells. You could probably play, you could easily play a whole bunch of crazy. You could play Insurrection off of this thing.
Yeah,
if you want,
easily.
If you got the power up high enough to be able to get to nine mana?
Insurrection's 8, I believe.
Yeah, so all you need to do is. Hey, there you go. Let's see, it's power. So all of a sudden, now we need to have Jor Kadeen in the 99, get 3 artifacts, and you can rip an Insurrection off the top of your deck. I'm not making this stuff up.
No, you could definitely do that. That's a jank idea in the making.
Oh, it totally is, and my Boros heart loves it. It's fun. Yeah, and are there any specific Boros decks before we end today that you really want to talk about that we haven't already touched on?
So a shout out to a very, very old, almost original commander option that we really don't see anymore, Bassandra Battle Seraph. If you haven't seen this card, it is the original Attacks Matters commander. It's a 3 red and a white, so 5 mana commander. It's an angel, it's a 4/4 flyer. It says players can't cast spells during combat, so nobody's gonna mess with you. No one's gonna mess with anybody during combat. All the combat tricks are gonna happen ahead of time. And then for just a single red, it says target creature attacks this turn if able. So you can start not goading everyone because they can attack you. But that's a very, very fun one I don't see very often anymore that I used to see all the time back in the day, and I would love to kind of see a resurgence of that one, considering we have so many more Attacks Matters cards these days.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I have considered putting a list together around Bassandra at some point, because my meta in my local play group loves playing a lot of some of the combat trick type things to fog you effectively. So being able to just cut through that with no nonsense seems pretty sweet.
Yeah, definitely. And then the only other one I would mention, we mentioned Aurelia the Warleader, and I do love that card, but I would be doing everyone a disservice if I didn't go back to my OG Brawl Commander, Aurelia, Exemplar of Justice. The 4-mana version. It's got flying, it's got mentor, so it's going to pump all your little guys, and then at the beginning of combat in your turn, choose up to 1 target creature you control. Until end of turn, that creature gets +2/+0, and trample if it's red, and gains vigilance if it's white. So it's going to make your stuff big, and then it's going to pump it even further with mentor and trample over and then still be around to block. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, actually, when I had this copy of Aurelia in one of my other decks, I always liked giving her both of the abilities because she is red and white. So all of a sudden, now you have a 4/5 on there, and if you want to go Voltron, you can.
Yeah, and that's one of the best things you can do, because it you can stack it so it happens. You don't even have to stack because it's at the beginning of combat. So if you give it to her, she's more likely to also give out that mentor trigger as well.
Yep. And there's just a lot of cool things you can do. I did have a Rayov Master Smith deck that I did talk about a long time back. I played a few times, ended up taking it apart, but at only 85 decks on EDH Rec, if you're interested in a very low-to-the-ground, very cheap equipment card, every creature that is equipped when Rayov is on the battlefield gains double strike until end of turn. When I was playing that deck, I was able to routinely get Rayov out turn 2, turn 3, be swinging for 6 commander damage already. So if you build that deck just right, you can just keep sustaining that effort and really just beat the crap out of the table. It's definitely there. There's a whole lot of cool stuff in Boros. Again, I highly recommend trying out Boros if you hadn't. It's a great ride. And again, and I really should trademark this, once you go Boros, you can't go back. All right.
No, the and you were saying you were saying it like it wasn't there, but I got to remind you, the aggro option is always there in Boros, even if you didn't design the deck that way. It finds a way.
Oh, it definitely does. It definitely does. All right, Doug, thank you for taking the time to talk about Boros with me. I know this is something that's really close to your heart, is to me too, and it was great just having you to talk for 30 minutes about extol the virtues of Boros and Lorehold and just tell the people how it is.
Well, I appreciate you very much for having me on. It was a blast.
All right, and again, where can people find your article series over on EDH Rec?
So every Friday on EDH Rec, it's two specific top 10. If this is coming out when I think it is, it should be the Green Cantrip top 10 list coming out here soon, which is a lot of fun. It really gets to scrape the bottom of the barrel because there's some new options in there, but there's not very many below it yet, although we're starting to get more and more of them. Outside of that, you can always find me on Twitter at Twitter at Dougie Nerd. That's at Doug the letter Y Nerd.
All right. And if you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/mtginquarantine. If you found the really happy looking Ulamog, you know you found the right place. And if you're interested in hearing any of the previous guild talks that I've done or any of the podcasts on the MTG Quarantine channel, you can find the entire back catalog of show on the usual podcast outlets. That's Spotify, Google, Apple, Player FM, Castbox, Podcast Addict, MTG Cast, and many other podcast outlets. Also, if you're interested in supporting the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information on how you can help me make more awesome content and also have your name dropped on episodes. So again, I'm going to give a huge shout out to my patron, Mr. Big Benz, for supporting the show. Thank you so much for supporting me and helping me make awesome content. And last but not least, as of last week, I dropped my 100th episode on the MTG in Quarantine podcast channel. And if you're interested in having the chance to win one of your choice of the new Innistrad Midnight Hunt Commander decks, head on over to twitter.com/mtginquarantine. Make sure to follow the conditions on the entry post, and you will be entered for a chance to win. And I hope you've enjoyed listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast today. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.